Chapter 1. Institutional Bullies. For decades, the biggest problem for conservatives and the biggest advantage for liberals has been the fact that conservatives think individually while liberals think institutionally. Think about politics in terms of religious outreach. Conservatives are like Jehovah's Witnesses, going door to door trying to convince people of the truth of their teachings. Liberals are like radical Muslims, toppling governments and installing Sharia law, then forcibly converting enormous masses of the population. That's why all the major instruments of political persuasion are in the hands of liberals. And it's also why liberalism, though almost invariably based on pernicious and dangerous misinterpretation at best and outright falsehood at worst, has been ascendant in America for the last 100 years. Look at every major bully move by the left over the past few decades, and you'll be able to spot the coordination between the left's instruments. The politicians and regulators work with the unions. The unions work with the journalists. The journalists work with the Hollywood clique. The Hollywood clique works with the leftist charitable foundations. The leftist charitable foundations work with the university professors. The university professors work with the judges. And all of them work with each other. There is only one way to make an institution conservativarian. It has to be purged. Now, in America, we generally don't look fondly on Soviet-style purges, complete with gulags and hastily dug graves. And so the American left has stayed away from that sort of thing. The left has taken advantage, however, of the American freedom to employ and work with whom you choose. The left doesn't do anything illegal in preventing their ideological opponents from working. They just do something tremendously immoral and unbelievably hypocritical, considering that they want private religious schools to have to employ transvestites who show up one day wearing a feather boa and a tutu. To understand just how the system of bullying works, we need to explore how the left took over the institutions that enable that bullying, and we have to take a look at how the current system works. Media bullies. On April 18, 2006, police arrested Duke University lacrosse players Reed Seligman and Colin Finnerty for the alleged rape and kidnapping of stripper Crystal Mangum. Mangum had falsely accused three white lacrosse players of raping her at a March party. The entire 2006 Duke lacrosse season was ultimately canceled. The media couldn't get enough of the case. They quickly turned it into an example of white-on-black racism, brutal exploitation in the mold of pre-Civil War slavery. Amanda Marcotte, a feminist bully blogger, attacked CNN for not immediately condemning the accused. "Can't a few white boys sexually assault a black woman anymore without people getting all wound up about it? So unfair." A few months later, Marcotte was hired by the John Edwards presidential campaign as an official blogger. As it turned out, there was actually a better shot that John Edwards had had sex with Crystal Mangum than that the Duke lacrosse players had. Marcotte may have been the loudest of the bunch, but she certainly wasn't the only journalist preternaturally eager to beat Duke lacrosse with a stripper pole. USA Today tracked down a Duke graduate student to complain. "I'm still afraid that the people involved will just get a slap on the wrist. Because of Duke's culture of privilege and superiority, they'll get away with it." That same reporter also lauded Duke students for distributing a flyer that looked like a wanted poster. 40 faces of young men smiling smugly for the camera. "These men are wanted on the Duke campus." Janet Reitman of Rolling Stone reported on Duke's retro view of rape. Reitman did not report on the stripper's retro view of perjury. Nancy Grace of CNN led the disgraceful posse looking to string up the Duke defendants sans evidence. On June 9, 2006, Grace interviewed a local North Carolina reporter who expressed the widespread sentiment that the case was falling apart already. Grace quickly whipped a Hitler mustache out of her back pocket and stapled it to the guy's upper lip. "Well, I'm glad you have already decided the outcome of the case based on all of the defense filings. Why don't we just all move to Nazi Germany, where we don't have a justice system and a jury of one's peers? What about it, Joe Lawless?" The New York Times, too, worked to keep the case alive, even as it began to crumble. Duff Wilson and Jonathan Glatter penned a piece in August 2006 stating, "By disclosing pieces of evidence favorable to the defendants, the defense has created an image of a case heading for the rocks. But an examination of the entire